When my clients stop translating and start thinking in English, their meetings change. They speak faster, they sound clearer, they connect better. Because thinking in English is not just about vocabulary, it's about switching to the units of reality their colleagues live in. Welcome to the Fluent Edge podcast for advanced English speakers who want to polish their language and level up their communication in high-performance environments.
I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, executive coach, author, and mindset strategist.
And I'm Sean Watson, your English communication coach and accent clarity specialist. So I guess in the US, Howie, when you were still living there, if somebody would ask you how far is that convenience store, you would usually just talk in terms of miles?
Yeah, imperial units. So, you know, 100 yards, 3 miles.
When we think of language, it's absolutely connected to the way that we see reality or the way that we perceive things in that specific language and culture.
There's a lot of Spanish that comes from Latin that has, you know, also English. It's the words that surprise me and that confuse me and that are hard to remember that actually are enriching my brain. If you think of the word thick in English, that means something. What I didn't realize until I was learning Spanish is that thick means two different things. It means the distance of an object, like this wall is 2 meters thick. Mm-hmm. Or the consistency, like this stew is very thick. It had never occurred to me that there were two different meanings for the same word. But now when I see the word thick in English, I now think, which thick is it?
And what about if we say the thick contractor forgot to finish the job correctly?
Right. Then which thick was that? Is it that his brain has a very sludgy consistency or just like concrete in his head?
I don't know if that's used as much in the US. Do you use that expression if you say somebody's a bit thick?
They're a bit thick.
Or is that more of, Yeah.
Slow, dim-witted.
I know that between French and English, there's quite a difference in intonation. For example, in English, if we greet somebody in the morning, we'd say, good morning, good morning, good morning. But in French, women in particular will say something like, bonjour, right? So it's got this kind of chipper, like, oh my God, I haven't had my coffee yet and I have to talk like that. Because in English, if you said, good morning, it's not quite the same. That's another good example of some of the nuances. It's not just different vocabulary words, but it's how we deliver those words.
My wife and I have a joke when we see two Spanish-speaking people talking to each other. We're like, are they about to fight or are they Spanish?
Exactly, because for us, when we see the hand gestures and what appears to be a heated argument, it could just be, you know, one inviting the other to his kid's birthday party next weekend.
Yep. So one of the privileges of this podcast is that I get to think of things that I'm interested in that you know way more about than me. And the one I wanted to bring up with you today is thinking in English. And this is for advanced English speakers. And I consider myself an advanced English speaker, except it's my only language at this point, really. I learned Hebrew for many years and got passable with that. And now when I can't think of a word in Spanish or I get nervous, the word in Hebrew pops into my head unbidden. So there's some thinking that's going on. It's not what I'm trying to do. But I'm married to someone for whom English is not her first language. My wife grew up speaking Afrikaans. And at a certain point, she must have, you know, I ask her, like, she dreams in English. She has trouble thinking of words in Afrikaans after not speaking it regularly for so many years. And I wanted to ask you, for advanced speakers of English as a second language who need it for day-to-day, for business, for making an impression, for being influential and effective, what are your thoughts about thinking in English? And so first of all, what does that mean from a language teacher's perspective to think in English versus translating from your native language?
When I was a kid in Canada, I remember when the government decided to transition from imperial measurement to metric. I think it happened when I was in grade 4. So I had already been very steeped in imperial measurements and gallons and inches. And suddenly there was this big shift. But even for me, for height, I usually still refer to inches and feet, but I'm okay with kilometers. As long as we stay in that mode, thinking, okay, 55 Fahrenheit, what is that exactly in Celsius? When you're able to get beyond all of the extra thinking and calculating that goes on to switch between languages, instead of always referring to what is that word in my language so that I can say it in Spanish, I think it's about being in a state of flow. That's what we want to aim for when we talk about thinking in the target language or thinking in English, so that I'm no longer thinking, can I conjugate this verb in the same way in French? I'm just kind of diving in and ready to make mistakes in order to learn from them and to progress into a state of flow with my language speaking. So when you're thinking in English, it's really when you stop searching for equivalents in your own language and you let the words arise on their own. And so it's really not about being perfect. It's about fluency of thought, which I think is easier for some people than others. Some people just naturally have a kind of a lexical way of thinking where they always have to associate, okay, that's the Spanish word. Okay, that's the English word. And when I'm speaking to people, I'm kind of riding two horses with one derriere. And I think the idea is to jump to the other horse and not worry too much about falling, because if you do, maybe you'll just fall into the water or into some soft sand or something like that. Yeah. Uh-huh. So it's really about moving away from analyzing or trying to spend energy on converting something. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of taking that chance rather than being clunky about it. And I think we need to sort of have faith in the process of getting into the flow of the target language.
Many years ago, I taught fourth grade math, and it was the time when kids had to memorize the multiplication table. And of course, all the kids were like, well, we have calculators. Why do we need to memorize it? And the answer was, until you memorize it, you can't engage in higher order thinking. You can't solve interesting problems if you have to remember or look up what 8 times 7 is. So it's almost like this flipping into fluency. For me, I'm still struggling a little bit with 20 Celsius. Like, what does it feel like? You know, there's 20 Celsius and then there's the weather. And right now I have 68 Fahrenheit as an intermediary. All right. And I'm using these sort of rules of thumb. And, you know, what I wanted to get to is 16 means something in and of itself. So I'm not jumping from horse to horse to get there. So we're talking about strategies, but can you decide to think in English at a certain point, or does it just start happening? Like, you're listening to the radio in English and all of a sudden you realize, wow, I really understand this. So how much is volitional and how much is just you expose yourself, you do all this comprehensible input and speaking and production, and then one day it just starts happening?
I don't think you can just flip a switch. It really comes from repeated exposure and context, as well as motivation. If we're doing it with the right intention and the right mindset, I think that we just gradually stop needing to convert. I think also immersion is the key. I always tell people the same things, like watch shows that you are interested in, but try following the subtitles and training your ear to listen to the language as well. Things like narrating your day or talking to yourself. These are ways that the target language, in this case, English, can kind of sneak in without asking.
So I want to ask about your executive clients, extremely accomplished, high-powered, very intelligent, and yet intelligent in their native languages, and maybe feeling less intelligent in English, even less intelligent than the people around them. So what are the advantages for those people to start thinking in English, which might feel like, you know, wearing heavy weights that slow your thinking down versus being brilliant in your native language and then translating?
Good question. The major pain point that comes up when I'm working with people who are from B2, which is upper intermediate, to C1, which is just below fluent. You know, the biggest pain point is how self-conscious they feel about their accent, their pronunciation, and even the way that they deliver their lines. And once executives have gotten over the fear of speaking or believing that they're less than because of their accent, the immediate payback is that they're speaking with more clarity and they understand cultural nuances more, right? There's more cultural resonance. If they're working with an international team or they're constantly in meetings with clients or people around the world, meetings just flow more naturally. People trust leaders who sound present and not translated. And we talked about presence in an earlier episode. For some executives, there still is a problem of vocabulary acquisition, especially if we think about advanced business phrases, idioms, collocations, but they can be understood. It's just that they want a way to sound more like themselves and less like an actor reading lines. The more they can think in English, it just makes them sound more authentic and builds more connection.
I'm currently working with leaders of a foreign government who are all trained in English, so they can speak to me, and how impressed I am when they use a collocation. One of them said the other day, well, that's neither here nor there. To use that phrase, they're a genius. Like, there's something so impressive about someone performing in your native language, even when you understand that they aren't as fluent as I am.
I see that quite often, and I love that. I mean, when people are using a phrase or an idiom or a collocation, it's very impressive as well.
And I think those collocations are very often so visual and striking and interesting. If we want to improve our memory, one of the tricks is to create images that are just weird, that stick in our mind. So this morning I was reading a story in Spanish, and there was a phrase, pulga en el perro. And I'm like, I'm not sure what that means. And I go to translate it, and it says, needle in a haystack. So like, pulga is a flea. So the Spanish is looking for a particular flea on the dogs. Now, if I use that phrase, my neighbors are going to be very impressed. Like, wow, your English has really gotten good.
Yeah. And I think another nuance in all of this language acquisition is the difference between direct and indirect communication. That's another stickler for some people I work with. As you know, from your work, in some cultures, it's okay to be very direct, as long as you're doing it with the right intention and it's not mean. Whereas in other cultures, if you ask somebody, well, how do you feel about this proposal or this idea? They kind of jump around the topic. It's a bit more discursive. In Irish culture, at least traditionally, it was more of an indirect communication culture. So many years ago, I took my wife to Ireland. I'd never been. My father is Irish background. And my fascination with Ireland is really about the megalithic period. So I'm fascinated with these ancient monuments and tombs and rituals that people were doing in kind of the pre-Celtic world of Ireland. Anyway, we're out in the middle of nowhere in the countryside of Ireland, and this was a few years back, so we still had to download maps like MapQuest or Yahoo Maps. So this was before we had GPS in our phones. And when we finished visiting, we were a bit lost. So we asked the security guard at this site in the middle of nowhere, what's the best way to get to the next town? And he thought for quite a long moment, and he said, you see those mountains over there? And I'm like, yeah, I see that. Well, don't go there. It's that way. Right? So they weave a little bit of extra into simple directions. And for him, he was just simply being conversational and helpful. It was very endearing, but it just reminded me of these nuances of direct and indirect ways of saying things. Right.
Yeah. For people who want to be effective in English, thinking in English allows you to be the proper amount of direct, which will change in English depending on whether you're speaking to a client, a peer, a prospect, a supervisor, their supervisor. It'll help you calibrate the social mores and relationships.
100%. Even the way that we address people above us in a company. In North America, it tends to be more casual, but in other cultures, that's a big taboo. You have to say Mr. or Professor. Many years ago, I was singing at an opera house in Europe, and the general director of the opera company was walking down the corridor one day, and I just used his first name. And he went all red. And I thought, my God, what have I done? I was just trying to be friendly. And then somebody said to me later, make sure that you address him with his title. And he was quite a down-to-earth person, which made me feel like it would be okay to be on a first-name basis. But it wasn't. So that's another thing that we have to throw into the mix when we think about thinking in that target language. It's also about all of the protocol, the behavior, the accepted social mores. There's so much that goes into that.
So what do you recommend for busy executives who are already running on empty or overwhelmed with their responsibilities, and it feels like speaking in not their native tongue is going to slow them down? What are some exercises or daily practices you recommend that can both be effective and not hobble their other effectiveness at their jobs?
I think it's often about quality over quantity. And sometimes when I'm working with people, they'll say, well, I don't have 45 minutes to work on this language issue or this pronunciation issue. When I'm thinking about the best way to help busy executives train themselves to think in English, it really comes down to language bursts. Even if you think about creating a 5-minute inner monologue, think to yourself in the target language for a short period of time. Do it for 3 minutes, 2 minutes. That's one thing that you can do. So short language bursts when it's either internalized, or you could record yourself daily. You could even just create a daily journal. Another thing could be shadowing. So you could choose a TED Talk. And again, I emphasize the word short, because sometimes, you know, people say, well, this TED Talk is 45 minutes long. Take the first 5 minutes and just focus on that. It's so easy to get the transcript now from YouTube, or you can use ChatGPT to generate a proper transcript. And just practice shadowing, but make sure that you're checking in with somebody occasionally, whether it's a coach or friend,
So what is shadowing?
Shadowing is simply parroting or mimicking what somebody is saying.
Gotcha. One of the programs that I used early on to learn Spanish, they did something at the beginning that they stopped doing as we went through the lessons, and it was sort of chanting after them. So they would say, quiero hacerlo hoy, which is I want to do it today. And then we would repeat, quiero hacerlo hoy. And they stopped doing it. But I found that was the most helpful part. But they don't chant anymore. So I have to get shadowing back into the practice somehow.
I would say the people who make the most progress are the people who weave this type of practice into their weekly agendas. And again, it doesn't have to be long. It could be 5 minutes. That becomes this kind of mini language burst. It's really about consistency rather than thinking, oh my God, I simply don't have enough time. It's not about quantity. It never should be about quantity. In some cases, I think spending too much time could be more detrimental than useful.
So at what level of English proficiency should leaders start attempting to think directly in English? And how do they know that they're ready for that?
Good question. Once your grammar is solid enough that you're able to follow or sustain full conversations, when you reach that level, when whoever you meet during the day, you're able to have a decent conversation with them with good grammar skills and with appropriate vocabulary.
So we've talked about this already, but just to kind of recap, how does thinking in English affect creativity, problem solving, or decision making when you start doing it as opposed to translating from your native language?
Now I'm really focusing, as I said earlier, on French and also on Italian. What I've noticed is when I'm actually engaging in a conversation in French, I sometimes feel like my personality has changed a little bit. There's something about my gestures, my facial expressions. Sometimes there's a little bit of a transformation that happens, and it can still be genuine. It can be authentic. For example, in French, they sometimes take longer to say something. In English, we tend to be a little bit more to the point. And so I have to be aware of that when I'm writing an email in French or speaking with a French person, that if I just give them my typical English answer, it can sometimes sound a bit abrupt. I don't know how it's felt for you with Spanish.
Yeah, learning Spanish, it's like unlocking a piece of myself. Like a human baby could learn any language, can speak any sound. It's as we grow older, our brain cells prune and we focus on the things that are going to be useful, but we still have this neuroplasticity. We can still develop new things. So if you had time to learn every language in the world, you would be a more complete human being. So whenever we learn a different way of thinking, a different way of apprehending, so, you know, you talked about like miles and yards. We didn't talk about in terms of train stops in Japan, how many stops away it is. Or I've heard that in Palestinian villages, they'll describe distances in terms of cigarettes, like how many cigarettes you smoke to walk from one to the other.
I'm not sure if we have time today, but I did prepare a document, or maybe I'll just put it in the description for people. It just shows you how different cultures talk about time, how they measure distances, or even value, and then age as well, like ages of time when it comes to the passage of time or a specific time period, or how we look at the value of something, how we quantify things. And when we talk about distance, like you said, with three train stops or as far as the eye can see, there's another expression as well. When you take on the responsibility and the task of learning a new language, you're entering another frame of reality with its own defaults, with its own worldview.
Yeah, I think it can lead to humility about the limitations of your own worldview as being one window and not the reality, so that other people are looking through other windows and are seeing different angles, different things, and different relationships.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share the Fluent Edge podcast with friends or colleagues who are working on their English or leadership communication. And if you're looking for support beyond this podcast, we've each opened up spots for one-on-one coaching, how we help professionals avoid burnout, lead with purpose, and shift their mindset for sustainable success.
And if you're focused on English clarity, global presence, or confident communication, book a free discovery call with Sean to explore how the two of you can sharpen your voice and impact together. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Keep thinking clearly, communicating boldly, and leading with your voice.
Stay sharp, stay human, stay fluent.